That's Hilton Ruiz on piano leading his band with West Side Blues. It's from his 1988 album, El Camino, The Road. Ruiz, born to Puerto Rican parents in New York City, was a child prodigy, proficient at piano by the age of 5 and performing at Carnegie Hall by the age of 8. In his early teens, he was performing with jazz greats like Freddie Hubbard and Joe Newman and Rahsaan Roland Kirk, and found his niche in Afro-Cuban jazz and bebop. He had gone to New Orleans to promote a CD to benefit victims of Hurricane Katrina in 2006 and seriously injured himself in a fall. He lapsed into a coma and died a week later on his 54th birthday, just shortly after his 54th birthday, on May the 19th, 2006. One of my favorites, Hilton Ruiz. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrace Lead, and today, Super Tuesday, we should focus our thoughts less on what is about to happen and more about what ought to happen. So we'll be talking about an alternative to this quadrennial charade. It's the big day, as you know, the bipartisan primaries and caucuses in Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Virginia, and Wyoming will largely determine today which candidates will likely capture their respective party's nomination for the general election. But we should be talking about what alternative to the duopolies charade should be in place by now, and how do we get that done? So, what are your thoughts on this day? Interestingly, just want to recap, the perception is that people are voting for president, and they're not. This is the Republican Party and the Democratic Party essentially taking care of party business. These elections, these caucuses and primaries being held all over the country and in U.S. territories, it's supposed to determine party business. And the party business is choosing a nominee, a person who will then advance to the presidential election, the general election in November, as the standard bearer, the representative of the duopoly of the Republican Party and of the Democratic Party. Now, people, believe it or not, many people seem to think that this is, in fact, the big deal. It isn't. It is in a sense that the people who have assigned themselves to a party, who have pledged their troth or who have registered as members of the two parties particularly, that they get a chance, supposedly in a democratic fashion, to choose who will be the candidate to go up against the opposite side or the other candidates running, irrespective of party designation, in November. So it's the party taking care of business. But as we have discussed, these each party has its own rules. And generally, although the idea is that when a candidate scores in a state, wins a victory in a state, the party has rules as to how that person actually wins, is considered the winner. And you are considered the winner when you get the most votes, popular votes, and with the popular votes then comes the allotting or the allotment of party officials, or known as delegates, the people who are officials of the party, designated as delegates. They are the ones who then go to each party's national convention, And at those conventions, that's where the decision ultimately is made as to who is going to emerge as the standard bearer. We've discussed here the Democratic Party is especially egregious in this way. The Republicans seem to be far more straightforward about their process, but as the winner in a particular election in a Republican primary or caucus will get the delegates that go for the territory. The Democrats have a whole different formula, and it is not to be assumed that simply because you get the higher vote, the larger vote in any state, that you also will get the delegates. For example, in the races so far run by Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, the actual delegate count should be that Hillary Clinton should have, she got 23 delegates in Iowa. She got 9 in New Hampshire, where she lost. She got 20 in Nevada, where she won. And we don't know yet the absolute delegate count. But in South Carolina, got 39 votes, 39 delegates. Well, my math tells me that just does not add up to 546. It just doesn't. And yet, that is the number she is presumed to have in hand, 546 delegates. And in the Democratic Party, to win the nomination, you need 2,383. This is just the fourth election coming up today in the primaries. This is, the fourth round of elections. So she already, something has to account for this business of the bad math. So what accounts for the difference is this group of people called superdelegates. They're now two different kinds of delegates in the Democratic Party. They fixed it. So along with the regular delegates that you would win, if you do win in a state, there's a group of people who are party officials. And they don't have to go along with the program. They're a separate group of people who can put their votes wherever they want to. They're kind of independent people. And if you have the right kind of machinery and you have the money to back that up and you have the lobbyists and you have the establishment behind you, you can go after these people as Hillary Clinton already has done. She's projected to have in hand right now the support of 546. And on today, the Super Tuesday, with all these states voting, it is estimated that by the end of the day today, she would have more than or at least half of the delegates needed to absolutely win the nomination. But we did not expect differently from the Clintons. Anybody named Clinton, whether it's Hillary or Bill, I call them all the time, the Bonnie and Clyde of politics. They'd do anything to just win. And in that sense, she is the opposite. In terms of the duopoly, she is the answer to Donald Trump. She is Donald Trump on the Democratic side. But today, what we should be talking about, because we know how this is going to turn out. We just know how it's going to turn out. We discussed it, and it's clear. We should be talking about constructing an alternative system. Today, as I have been discussing, I just chose the point where we started to have a pretty good groundswell of popular support for something different with Jesse Jackson's campaign in 1984, starting at that point. Earlier, of course, with Shirley Chisholm, but in recent memory, we had a true groundswell. Shirley Chisholm was in the vanguard of in the sense that she was female, she was black, Caribbean woman also, and a person who, to some degree, resembled Bernie Sanders in a sense, because although she was of the Democratic Party, she also was against the Democratic Party in many ways. She took issue with many of its positions and was in some ways very much punished for taking independent positions, positions independent of the Democratic Party leadership. But in recent years, we could point to Jesse Jackson and the beginning of the Rainbow Coalition as perhaps the best example of a burgeoning movement that galvanized the interests of several disparate groups that up until that point really did not have a working relationship with each other, and in some cases didn't even exist, but came into formation based on the idea of coalitions having enormous political potential, and could be formed into a formidable opposition to the ruling elite. That really took hold, I think, in 1984, with Jesse Jackson's first run as the Rainbow Coalition candidate. Of course, we know what happened there, a total capitulation to the Democratic Party, and we're seeing repeats of it, in fact, today. That's what laid the groundswell of support, supposedly, for the so-called front runners, but most notably for Hillary Clinton. And she stands now in a very advantageous position as, quote, the front runner on the Democratic side, principally because of the shenanigans, the political shenanigans behind the scenes to actually undercut the Democratic process. So today, what are your thoughts about how an alternative could be constructed so that, in as much as we are going through this process every 4 years, the process of selecting a president of the United States, do we make it a point to say, well, okay, this is the last time we end up being between the devil and the deep blue sea in terms of our political choices, that we are going to form something, or there's something needs to happen to give people another choice, another way out of the morass that we're in, where we have to choose between the lesser of two evils and the evil of two lessers. Are we going to stop this pathological cycle? And if so, how do we do that? What needs to happen? We have a regular caller, Joel, who reminds us all the time that movements are the answer. Not necessarily parties, but movements. But of course, we know that parties grow and can grow out of movements. But we have no real alternative in that sense. And I don't want to dismiss the fact that the Green Party does exist and other smaller parties do exist. But I'm talking about how do we make these alternatives normal and perfectly accessible? What has to happen that so that on Super Tuesday, we're not just talking about whether you choose between these vapid choices on the Democratic side or on the Republican side. That can't possibly be the only conversation we should be having in a country that supposedly has all of this intellectual firepower, all these visionaries, and we only have two parties, essentially, that time and again give people just one option, either choose this or choose that. So your thoughts on this Super Tuesday with respect to this particular premise, how do we construct a progressive alternative to this nonsense? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And what are your concerns about the fact that these are the choices that we have, or we seem to have? Is there some other way of working this thing called democracy? How do we achieve a truly democratic society in which, as I said to you before, it is not really about voting, but in as much as we are voting, what are we voting for? What is the vision? How do we craft another path, another way of working? Or is there something that you know that has some promise but needs some loving tending to? Another way that is working but perhaps not nearly as largely as it needs to be? And what do you see as the alternative? That's the question. 888-874-4888. Let's go to Lawrence, New York, with Chris.
How you doing, Ms. Treese?
Hello, Chris. It's Utrice. Just Utrice.
Oh, Utrice. And hello to the PRN listeners and staff.
Thank you.
I guess in the short term, to address your question, because I'm at work and I probably shouldn't be calling you from out here, but in the short term, I would say that to create some movement or to galvanize people, I would definitely point the finger at people like yourself in the progressive movement, the leaders. I think it would be a good show for us to see you guys unite on a larger scale. And I know that there are some issues within that family, but it would be awesome to see you guys work that out. Because I think while there are differences and I see some valid concerns, at least you guys seem to have a lot more sense than the general population, and would serve as good leaders for the rest of us. And
aren't you, Chris, so far you're feeding into this notion of leadership? Isn't leadership really a democratic thing itself?
When I say leadership, I don't mean it in the sense where we're going to vote you in because we think you're good. When I say leadership, I mean we need not just journalists and people who are politically aware, but we need scientists and doctors all sitting in the same room informing us based on their actual knowledge. I don't mean popularity. I mean a skill and knowledge-based body to help us make informed decisions. We're not going to vote for you because we like you. We're going to vote for you because you know the work, you know the problem, and you have actual solutions.
Is there something that you can bring to our attention that kind of resembles what you're talking about in terms of a structure?
I've heard that there are certain countries that use systems like that. I can't quote one to you off the top of my head. I'll do the research, and when I call you again, I will tell you. And before I go, let me just say, in the long term, I think the other thing that we need to do is start planning 20 and 30 years from now. We should be deciding which of our children are going to be doctors, which are going to be computer programmers, which are going to be storytellers. These are things that are planned ahead of schedule in order to keep us out of the loop. Even the very cities we live in, they decide what they're going to do with them 25 years before we even know what's happening. And we need to start planning 25 years ahead in the long term.
Well, if I could ask you one more question. I know you're calling from your job, but what is the most serious and pervasive failing, you think, of the system that we're in right now? What would you say it is?
The failure or the actual what they've accomplished? What do you mean?
The failure of the system as it exists right now. What is the greatest failure?
The failure of the system as it exists right now is that we don't have, we as a people, in general, white, black, everyone, the majority of us, we do not have equal access to the resources in this country.
Okay. I agree with you there.
Clean air, healthy food, and water. We do not have, even the pollution, you know, is did they decide where that goes?
All right. Thank you very much, Chris, for getting us started today. Thanks for contributing. Well, that starts us off, and it's a really interesting observation about democracy, which is what I've said. Democracy has nothing to do with voting as such. Voting is a way of giving permission to a system of government or governance. Democracy really is about the quality and frequency of access we have to the strategic resources of our society. And he just named it, you know, good air, good food, good water. I mean, as an example. Of course, there are many other strategic resources in our society. Education, employment, health care. These are strategic resources, education. So when we are constructing an alternative, the question is, what should we be thinking about? From Los Angeles, Stuart, you're on the air.
Hi, Etrice.
Hello.
First, I want to know how you're doing with your recovery.
I'm hanging in here and doing fine. Thank you.
Great. I haven't heard anything. I think the biggest problem is that most people don't really know what's going on. And I think it's because of their resources as far as what they watch, what they listen to, radio, TV, they don't get it. I mean, I talk to people that really don't, they really don't know what's going on. And I hear a lot about taking the money out of politics, but I took it further in my mind. I was thinking, well, what's the money for? What are they using it for? Maybe we need to go at that angle. And the biggest answer to that, to me, is TV and radio, media. And to me, the solution is that we need to take back the airwaves. Because it's supposed to be public, right? Publicly owned. We loaned it out to the networks. We need to bring it back and restructure what we're doing with those airwaves so that people can know what's going on.
Okay, I appreciate that point. But let me ask you, from a political perspective, since this is Super Tuesday, with the duopoly taking care of its business, how do you see, on a political level, how do you see an alternative system functioning? What should it look like? What should it first address?
Alternative system. Mm-hmm. Well, other than what I said, you got someone like Jill Stein who doesn't get any coverage, doesn't have a chance to be in the debates. I mean, I might have to vote for Bernie Sanders because she's not going to even be in the running. God, the alternative to the current system. Man, it's so locked in. I got to go back to what I said. People mm-hmm. need to know what's going on so that they can decide to do something about it. I think as long as people don't know what's going on, no one's going to say anything, and the corporations are running everything, and boy, I don't know what you can do.
Okay, well, that's a valid point of view as well. I mean, it's fine to basically say that. because that is knowing what we don't know, or where we are so confused, or we don't have an answer. That is fine. That is perfectly fine, because it gives us a starting point, you see? Thank you so much, Stuart, for calling and contributing today.
Thank you, Eutrice.
Thank you. Palm Beach, Chris, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon, Chris. What are your thoughts on the Super Tuesday about a healthy alternative to this quadrennial charade?
Well, like the other caller said, you know, about alternative systems, so on and so forth, the previous two I heard anyway. I mean, I agree with that, but I think we have to deal with capitalism first. If we don't deal with how we value money or how we spend money, pool money, save money, et cetera, if we don't deal with that first, everything else, it doesn't matter because of the value that we put on the dollar. Like, everyone cares about everybody else, so on and so forth, but, you know, money makes a huge difference in how a lot of people view the world.
Now, would this be a matter of individual development? But I'm asking, as a political system, let's say you are designing a political system to counter what exists. What would you say would be important elements to incorporate? How could it function?
I would first say, as I said before in a previous call, we just need smaller scale systems. That's the one thing I agree with the Republicans on when they say a small government. I guess we could all be under the flag of the United States, but, I mean, we should be able to operate as, if you build communities, as almost like independent countries, so to speak, sort of like a European style governing system. However, you're autonomous in your area. So, for instance, like, if enough like-minded people wanted to, you know, move to Florida, everybody could take over Florida. Like, we have our own rules. We do what the hell we want to do.
Do you think that basically the system as it exists, the Democrats and the Republicans, that maybe just with a little tweak here and a tweak there, they may just suffice in terms of meeting the political needs, doing politically what needs to be done to meet people's needs, or is a situation so bad that it calls for something entirely different?
Yeah, oh no, they will never make any tweaks, something different altogether. I mean, actually, you know what? The system works effectively for those who run it. So from our side of things, we see the problems, its shortages, so on and so forth. The guys on the other side of the table, they're looking at it like it works perfectly. One thing I would, and I also wanted to speak on South Carolina. I don't know what's wrong with black folks. I'm sorry. Like, how you could just be out there supporting Hillary. I'm not saying you had to run to Bernie, but to support Hillary the way they did, to give her that kind of victory, it just shows, like, they're not even alert to what's going on to them. They don't even know what's happening to them.
And that's absolutely true. They don't know what is happening to them. And that is one of the victories that these systems score. Stuart just telling us about the effectiveness of media and, of course, the recruitment of leaders to dumb down the followers. So we have a combination of 1-2 punch. And between these 1-2 punches, you have people who are completely, they just are not given some good reference points here to honor even their own history, their own past.
It's laughable because, you know, if you don't laugh, you'll cry, you know, so I prefer to laugh. So when you watch these numbers come in on the media, you're just like, how did that happen? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, thank you.
Real quick, I'll just say this. that just goes to show that those of us who are quote-unquote awake, we really need to turn our attention inward towards our own communities and circles and try to enlighten, so to speak, our own people, because clearly they are being misguided willfully, and we kind of have to take the reins of that.
All right. Thank you so much for contributing today. From New York, Al, you're on the air. Tell us about the system that you think ought to be in place. What are some of the characteristics of such a system?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is basically take the power away from the current system that's in place. And the best way of doing that is by making the airways, the public airways, which we, the public, own, free for any political dialogues during these contests that exist, so that no longer the money would influence the candidates. Today, he who has the most money gets the most airtime. Well, let's use the system they have in France. Everyone gets equal time on the airwaves, and there will be no charges for that. And the second part, what we need to do is take away these so-called debates from the networks and give it back to the League of Women Voters, who were doing an excellent job before the Republicans and Democrats got together and took it away from them. So that in itself will move some of the power structure that's in place, because if you don't do that, then no matter how good your group or organization that's trying to break in, you're still going to have to go up against the power that's in place. By neutralizing the power, the third parties will have the opportunity and equal time to be exposed to the American people.
Is the duopoly redeemable at all? Are there any aspects of these two parties that you would say are worth preserving?
No, there is. The thing is, it's like anything else. The way of business is so ingrained, and so many favors to people are owed, and obligations, and you name it. It can't be solved. The best way is to leave it where it is, and bring up the new, we'll call it a party for lack of a better word, but let's introduce a third party or a new organization. And with the League of Women Voters giving that new organization equal billing on the air, let the people then look at the three, the two existing do-nothings, and the hope of a new party. And we could have two new parties, it's just not one.
Mm-hmm. Because where do you think the progressive community here is failing?
The progressive is failing in the sense that it basically acquiesces to the power structure. It recognizes the failures that are inherent in the current systems that are in place, but feel we can't do anything. And I think that everyone should vote for Jill Stein in this election for the simple reason that if Jill Stein is able to show large numbers, somebody might say, hey, you know what? A third party can, somebody like Jill Stein, who might be wishy-washy to certain organizations, was able to garner that many numbers. Imagine if we had a third party that was actually addressing the needs of most of the people. So that might be an incentive to move forward. Right now,
well,
how about
the argument that if people voted, say, for Bernie Sanders, that would signal to the Democratic Party that it needs to change and become more in tune with the electorate?
I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to be a change. I think, remember, you know, we all fall victim to what happened with Obama. Remember the whole slogan of change, you know, vote for me and I'll set you free nonsense? Well, everybody fell for it. I voted for him. And what happened? As soon as you got in, oh, that guy, he's not around anymore. So Bernie Sanders can talk the talk, but what's going to happen if he takes office? Is he going to, you know, do the, oh, I can't do that anymore because of the Republic. Is he going to play that card? Because then we're back to the same scenario. I'd say anything during the election, but once you get elected, it's business as usual. And that's what, you know, ironically, that's one of the reasons why Trump, I think, is gaining traction, is people are saying, well, this guy has no allegiance to anybody, so once he gets in there, they're all going to hate him. So he's, you know, so at least we know the guy in the White House doesn't have any backroom deals. We know Bernie has them, and certainly Hillary has them. So it's very frustrating.
But it's worth, but do you see that it is necessary to begin to organize?
Oh, absolutely. We should have done that. Yeah. Name a year.
It's long overdue in your view.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, and the fact is that once the political parties got together and took away from the League of Women Voters the whole process of debates, which they did have, because one of the reasons why, as we all know, that power was taken away from them was because the Republicans and Democrats submitted the list of questions that you guys are going to ask us, and they said, no, we have our own. And they said, no, you're going to use only these. And they said, no. And then they got together and they knocked them out. So you only get all these soft, you know, questions that everybody already knows about, you know. So, and as you, you know, aptly put, the networks have a vested interest.
No question
about
money. That.
So if you take the money out of the equation, well, guess what, CNN? You're going to air the debates, but you're not going to get paid for them. That's part of the deal. You want to buy airtime from the public's airwaves? Well, guess what? That's a public service you're going to have to provide.
Well, actually, that is FCC law. It just happens to be FCC law that they, if they are doing something in the public interest, they're required to provide free time, especially on a local level as well. They're required to devote, but they long abandoned that, and they've been able to get away with it. Nobody has been fined. Nobody's lost their license, and I haven't seen any credible, except I think only the Freedom Party has lodged credible challenges to FCC licenses in New York City, where they're supposed to be devoting a certain amount of time, these stations, to community interests. Thanks, Al, for your call today.
You're welcome.
We'll stay in New York with Raymond. You're on the air. Hello, Raymond, you're on the air. Apparently not. We lost him.
Hello?
Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. We're hearing you.
Oh, hi. How are you doing? This is Melvin from Chelsea, I guess.
Oh, so it said, my cue said Raymond. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Hello to you, and I hope you're well and healthy and you're doing well.
All right. Thank you so much. But let's deal with the question right away. What do you think on this day, Super Tuesday, about the duopoly and what the progressive community's response ought to be to a Super Tuesday?
The progressive and those who are free thinkers are not doing what they are mandated by the people who are the rank and files of their members, and that they have been co-opted by their underwriters, their sponsors, and by the so-called fake liberal corporate elite and the producers and the networks that currently run the misinformation system on the United States and worldwide. They perpetuate this glamorized, sexy political campaign, which is minutia. It is irrelevant. Who is running for the Democratic leadership? It is also irrelevant if the Republican leader is Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Once they get in, they are co-opted by the Rothschild banking system. They are co-opted by the military-industrial complex. They are co-opted by the lobbyist groups from foreign countries who get millions, billions and billions of dollars of aid. So the Progressive Party, to answer your question, must seek out the they must seek out a remedy for themselves where they are challenging on the grassroots level, the community level, on the municipalities and the county, the local county levels first, meaning vote those who are like-minded. This is 2016.
But Melvin, if I may ask you, I appreciate your point, but we're looking here at a national office. The elections are for president. What would you say would be the architecture of an independent movement? What would some of the elements be, or a critical element of that movement be, to support a national candidate, a national effort?
I would coin the phrase, or I would coin the motions that Elizabeth Warren is doing, asking for pure transparency in the election results, in the election process. The one key component which is missing is that we have electronic machines and paper ballots, and we have each state with the power to dictate how the voting will be cast. Now, this is state by state. We understand that states have their own Senate. They have their own Congress separately. I think a more uniformed system where the states choose to have live, televised CNN, C-SPAN accounting of the paper ballots, where we require go back to the brick and mortar days of counting the paper ballots on that level, even on national even on national races. Also, the Electoral College must be abolished. Completely, the Electoral College must be abolished. And also, the Obama has done something that's very, very bad. It's called House Resolution 4310, where he's actually allowed propaganda to be infiltrated and permeated in through the broadcast networks. It's House Resolution 4310, which he snuck in there under the part of the 2013 National Defense Act. This is a detriment to our politics and to our political discourse, because why would you want to have Fox News, which is allowed, and CNN and MSNBC, to trump up sexy lies about their candidates, or about just national or international news? So House Resolution 4310, which is called the Smith-Mundt Act, should be abolished. They also has. I would also suggest that, as far as the architecture is concerned, that we must honor and respect indigenous Aboriginal rights of people of color who've been deeply disfranchised, who have been killed, murdered, and not have been allowed to into the polls and vote because of one excuse or another excuse. They must be allowed to have the highest level of respect, the highest level of positioning as far as the criteria. That's pretty much the Native American Indians of African descent, of course, and those who were indigenous here far before the immigrants came here into this country. Another part of the architecture that should be noted and should be implemented is the fact that we have a body politic which dismisses women's reproductive rights. We're 2016, well into the 21st century, I might add. I will say that again, well into the 21st century, yet we have a Supreme Court of mostly white men deciding on the reproductive rights of women, and that's, to me, is barbaric.
Well, thank you for contributing today. It's so great that we're beginning these discussions, and they should continue, and they will continue. But I want to thank you for putting your flavor into this wonderful intellectual soup today. Thanks so much.
May I say something else? If I may say something
sure.
quickly to you?
Sure.
We, Thank you. We also have a, I would say, a very cool and very progressive, alternative progressive media coverage from Madea Benjamin from Cold Pink to Amy Goodman from Democracy Now to James Hightower from the West Coast to Tom Hartman and to, of course, your station and Gary Noel. However, I would have to say that we must challenge mainstream so-called progressive thought, and that is, I would say, NPR, also MSNBC, CNN. We must challenge them on their correctness, on their accuracy in news. That is the very much, that is the key, because we're not going to have any type of discourse unless we allow the fake progressive news to brainwash our population.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Let's go to Los Angeles. George, is George with us? I hope you are.
Here, first I want to say a lot of the conversations are not being heard because there's technical problems going on. I talked to the engineer, and yeah, he's not even aware of it.
Okay, so I'm glad that you brought that to his attention.
I wanted to let you know about that. Boy, I'm right in line with a lot of these people. I have 4 points, and I'll try to make them quickly. The last one mentioned the Electoral College. Yeah, I was thinking that we got to get rid of this delegate system. It is just, it's horrendous. It's a farce, actually. And voting fraud. I can't believe how most of the Republicans are getting away with blatant fraud and nothing's being done about it. Have you seen Greg Palast's documentary about this from the 2001 election?
No.
Oh, he uncovered a lot of stuff going on there.
Oh, I mean, it is known. Every election is more than enough documentation all across the country as to what has happened in terms of voting fraud, you know, at the polls. We know that. But let's get you to the issue of what would a progressive architecture look like in terms of constructing something different?
Well, I just got to go back to that delegate situation. The couple of other things I have here, I don't know if they really answer your question. One thing was, I keep thinking that public officials should all be subject to being recalled. I mean, we have a lot of people in these government agencies that shouldn't be there. Even a president. I mean, a president, someone that lies to the public to get the presidency and then turns around and does the opposite should be called on that. Something should be done about that. And I don't know, about the fraud, I have to say, I'm just surprised nothing's being done about it. Congress is mostly lawyers. And, I mean, even Al Gore, I think, I'm not sure if I remember this right, the New York Times counted the votes, and he won by, what was it, 500,000?
I don't remember it wasn't that large a margin. It was a narrow margin, but I don't remember the exact number. But
so the fact that something like that could happen, and then in commercials, lying in commercials should be outlawed, especially political commercials. Hey, pharmaceutical commercials. They shouldn't be allowed to lie. Something should be done about that. I'm really surprised that lying is perfectly allowed. The last point was, well, you know what? I covered everything.
Well, thank you, George, for chiming in today. I appreciate your contribution very much.
Thank you.
Brings us to the end of our program. And really, what is important to keep in mind is that we're just beginning the conversation about this in earnest. So don't be upset if you think it's all scattered. It's fine, because we need to start talking about envisioning something else. We simply cannot continue down this path where every 4 years we have different versions of the same old song and dance with the typical outcomes. So the outcome being, well, it may be the Republicans this year, and then it may be the Democrats' turn the next time. And either way, it's insufficient. The processes are insufficient to accommodate the realities that we are experiencing and dealing with every single day. And as a community of interest, we should begin to galvanize our power in order to create an entirely different response to what is happening, and to insist that, of course, we could flex our muscle and get things done. But we have to start having the conversation and envisioning this as a reality and moving aggressively to get it done. So I think it is a great start. And I'm sure, of course, people have been discussing this for many, many years, but it seems appropriate on this day that we should begin to reintroduce the idea that it needs to be done so urgently that this is a good time to make that start, because people are politically minded. It is the political season, and there are many ways to use this process to illustrate the logic of the idea. So thank you so much for calling today and contributing. We will continue these conversations as we go along. Of course, tonight we'll get to know the damage that has been done, and we'll be discussing that tomorrow. But in the meantime, always remember that it is good to it's a good thing that you can actually predict an outcome. It means that you are well aware of some of the key issues involved, but we have to now actualize. We have to work to make things manifest, right? Thank you. So coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. I really like that program, and I hope you stay tuned and listen to it as well. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Drop me a note. Let me know what you're thinking about the program. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.